And here we go. Welcome, everyone. This is R.D. Kulik, your host for the Ex-Millennial Man, the podcast from Seedsing.com. This is going to be not really our first official podcast, but we'll call it our first unofficial podcast. I'm going to be labeling these our test podcasts. This is basically a way for me to understand how podcasting works, get some content up there, and you, the listener, to get an idea of what the Ex-Millennial Man's going to be about. This particular first conversation was with my close friend, Tina S. We discussed the movie Interstellar, and we saw it together, and I did not really enjoy it, but she liked it a bit more, and I kind of felt like that wasn't right because of her background, which we'll go into during the conversation. It also melted into kind of good science in movies, and that make it a good movie. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Normally I'd be plugging our advertisers here, so we're hoping to hear that soon in the future. And go give us some feedback. Tell us what you liked, what you did not like, and get ready for the official launch of the Ex-Millennial Man, tentatively for about mid-July. Keep everyone informed on the website. Enjoy the conversation. Hello all, this is R.D. Kulik, welcome to the Seed Sing Podcast. Today we're going to talk about a movie that's about a year old, but you know what, let's just talk about it anyways. And so you guys know there will be spoiler alerts in here. If you have not seen Christopher Nolan's Interstellar, then stop listening. I hate telling people to stop listening, but you really should, because we are going to expose every plot detail in this movie. With me today is Tina, and I'll tell you a little bit about why I brought her in on this conversation to begin with. First off, I am a scientist, a political scientist, which is like the most non-scientist scientific person out there. So I brought in somebody that has a little background on real science. Say hello to the internet, Tina, and tell people a little bit about why you are here to counter my opinion.
Hello, internet people. Well, as you like to remind me, you have the word science in your degree as many times as I do. I have a bachelor's of science in mechanical engineering, and I have been working in aerospace for about 20 years now.
And your degree, you got that at what state college?
At my land-grant Cal College, Purdue University.
Oh, yeah, that's like on the East Coast. It's like an Ivy League school or something, isn't it?
It's a public school in the fine state of Indiana.
Yeah, I know. They were good in basketball for a lot of regular season, just not very good in the postseason. But, you know, for those of you that don't know Purdue beyond basketball, I would assume they're very good at engineering, except, you know, that's what I read on the internet.
Also Drew Brees.
Yes, and Drew Brees, too. So we're going to talk here about the movie Interstellar, Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. I am not going to spend the time to tell you what this movie is about, because it's just going to be really confusing. But on a very basic note, you have, you know, Matthew McConaughey, after his big Oscar win and everything, decides the best thing to do is to farm, even though he's a great pilot. And then he goes off into space because he has to do that too. And you can probably tell by the tone of my voice, I was not as quite as impressed with this movie as most people were. Now, what did you think of the science in this movie? Or actually, the discussion of science?
Well, I'm not that qualified. You know, I'm an engineer, not a physicist, which means I specialize in close enough, not actual truth. However, so I'm not really qualified to comment on the interstellar physics of the matter. Certainly, I thought that the movie's approach to science was science and applied science, for that matter, is a little bit silly. There is a scene early on when Matthew McConaughey's character... I should also preface this by saying I love Matthew McConaughey and would listen to him read the phone book. So I'm a little biased in that regard.
I'm one of the gayest straight men out there, and I really enjoy my McConaughey, so don't worry about that.
So, but there is a scene early on where he is talking to his... to his son's guidance counselor at school, and they tell him that the world does not need any more televisions, so we don't need any more engineers. Now, I don't know if I was supposed to be appalled by their lack of vision, but as a practical matter, as an engineer, it seems to me that if you have a food crisis, some solid agricultural engineering focused on irrigation systems and things like that might have gone a long way towards solving your problem.
Yeah, here's the thing. I defend Christopher Nolan a lot. I think the guy makes incredible movies. You know, I'm a big fan of the Batman movies and the Prestige, and you know, I think these are great movies. And you know, it's escaping me, the Memento. You know, these are very, very good movies. That was a moronic line.
Well, it really was, and it's, you know, one of my pet peeves with the media in general, and you know, with Hollywood in particular in this instance, is that, you know, now in our Silicon Valley age, people talk about engineers as if all engineers work on Facebook or work on the iPhone. And, you know, there are a lot of engineers that do a lot of different things. There are engineers that figure out how to put your laundry detergent in the box. You know, there are engineers that make sure that jet engines don't fall off of airplanes. There are engineers.
Those are very important engineers. I've had to fly a lot in my life and no air engines have fallen off, so I appreciate that work.
Well, there's an army of engineers that do that. There are engineers that figure out materials, that figure out ceramics, composites, and new materials, high temperature alloys. There are engineers that work on chemical processes, specialty chemical processing. There are millions of engineers in this country, and very few of them work on the iPhone, and not all of them do frivolous things like television.
Well, this is actually, I think, an important thing about this movie and this discussion, because that was early on in the movie, and I know, you know, talking to you and sitting next to you watching this movie, it did not make you very happy. But I was like, oh, come on, let's see where this is going. I want to actually jump to the end of the movie, when the movie ended and Anne Hathaway is with all the embryos or whatever the hell sitting on some planet, or if you conspiracy theorists want to believe it, some soundstage in Burbank, but, you know, sitting somewhere with all these things, and it's like, yay, humanity did something. And I was like, well, this movie kind of sucked. You had a little bit of a different view of it.
Well, I mean, well, again, it's a practical matter, you know, that part. Having, you know, having a small child myself, I don't know how one woman is going to raise however many embryos all at the same time. That seems like kind of a tall order.
Well, I mean, it is Anne Hathaway. She is an Oscar winner, so
I understand, but, you know, we're not talking about the Duggars here, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how she's going to feed them all. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And, you know, not to get my feminist hackles up, but why is a lady stuck raising all the babies at the end of the movie?
Well, come on. Hollywood movie, you know, directed by men. I mean, honestly, who the hell else is going to do it?
But I will say that other than that, I actually enjoyed the movie up until mostly the end. I thought the end of the movie, not even just the Anne Hathaway raising all the babies part, but I thought that that the end of the movie with McConaughey haunting his daughter's bookcase was a little Kubrickian for my taste. But, you know, that's a matter of taste. That's not my style. The other major issue I had with this movie was the idiotic Matt Damon subplot. But other than that, I actually enjoyed the film. Now, I mean, those are a lot of qualifiers, but, you know, in a 2.5, almost 3-hour movie, I'd say I enjoyed a good 2 hours of it.
No, and that is, I think that's where maybe I'm coming at. And, you know, years ago, Lisa Randall, PhD, wrote this book about, you know, particle physics. I'm probably getting everything wrong about it, but I read an article about her in Time magazine when I was on the airplane. I thought, oh, this chick's kind of good looking, because I'm sometimes that sexist, and I decided to pick up her book because I want to understand physics. And you know what? I will give her a lot of credit. I learned a little bit about the theory of relativity I never knew before, and then after that, everything was beyond me. But now that I say everything is beyond me, there is about 5% or so I started to see about this idea of extra dimensional and string theory and all these things that it looked to me that Interstellar was trying to grasp, which kept me interested during the movie. But you talk about the dumb Matt Damon plot, and I like myself some Matt Damon a lot, but it was dumb, and you know, not that he was dumb in it, I just thought the plot was dumb.
Oh yeah, Matt Damon himself was fine. It was poor writing.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'll give it that, but there were ideas in there that kept my interest, but for the most part, when the movie was done, I just felt empty. Were some of those ideas what made you say in the end, hey, this isn't so bad?
You know, sort of. The idea that if we do start interstellar travel, you know, we're probably not going to be zipping about the stars as on Star Trek at, you know, warp 8. And
it'll be more like, you know, Star Wars and Han Solo going through the asteroid field.
Right. It'll be just like that.
All right.
No. No. So, you know, you watch Star Trek and they talk about, oh, we're not going to be back at Earth for another 2 years. Well, you know, in reality, you're probably not ever coming back to Earth. Or, you know, like in this movie, you come back, you know, 50, 60, 70 years later because of the relativistic effects, where time is moving slower for you because you're moving at near light speed. And I did think that this idea, you know, when they were down on the planet with the tidal waves, that decades passed for every hour they were down there.
Yeah, I will say, in a 2-plus-hour movie, I actually thought that was easily the best part of that whole movie.
Yes, yes, I agree. But not only that, you get the sort of that crushing human drama of him realizing that his children are grown, that he's a grandfather. By the time he gets in that 2-hour span, all of that has happened.
I mean, you know, Interstellar is one thing, and obviously there's some entertainment aspects that you enjoyed that, you know, maybe I was just caught up in, well, this science is stupid. Not that I knew anything about it, but I just couldn't get beyond a few things in the movie. It does seem Interstellar is part of this whole oeuvre, so to say, of these realistic, I don't even want to call them science fiction movies, almost these realistic science movies. And we had Gravity year before, we have The Martian coming out this year, which is something that I've just learned about. I guess I wasn't on the zeitgeist on that one. But even like Gravity tried so hard, and Interstellar tries so hard to be realistic, but I think Gravity suffers from the same thing. It's just a dumb story when it comes down to it.
Well, you know, I think Gravity... And maybe I'm a little more forgiving toward Gravity than you are also. You know, now, I think Gravity as a disaster movie works really well, because that's all it is. It's when they try and get into something larger about the human will for survival and things like that, that the movie kind of loses me. You know, and again, as a person who is enough of a nerd to have gone to space camp, you know, we get enough heroic physicians in the pop culture. Why does Sandra Bullock's character in that, why can't she be a heroic engineer? Because frankly, if she were, you know, on a spacewalk, she's probably not a physician. She probably is, she can still be a doctor, but it's probably a PhD. And
yeah,
not
yeah, about so, every engineer I've ever met, that's been their big hankle or their big thing they get up about that movie, which I understand, because yeah, even I kind of thought that in the end. Well, yeah, of course she's a doctor. She has her PhD in aerospace engineering. And no, she's like, she's a veterinarian
not,
or some BS.
Even,
I don't even
no,
know
not,
what else she
but
was.
Not even, I'm not even saying that she needs to be an engineer. But, you know, like a research scientist or something like that. Not a practicing medical doctor. That, I thought, was a little strange. Not to say that no physicians have ever gone into space. I just thought as an artistic choice, it was a little bit odd.
Well, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen these movies, but I'm pretty darn sure that Dave in 2001 was, you know, an engineer. He was an astronaut. He was,
sure, but here's
that,
the thing.
Well, my point is that was like the movie that all these other movies say they're supposed to be about. And we get, I mean, you know, I understand Interstellar, I guess, is better than Gravity because Matthew McConaughey was an engineer, but now he's in a world where we don't need engineers anymore.
Well, again,
so where are all the other astronauts coming from?
Well, but again, my issue with that is the idea that the only thing that engineers do is make high-end toys. you know, for rich people. No, engineers do a lot of really practical things. If you're listening to this podcast right now in an air-conditioned or heated home, you can thank engineers for that. The fact that your home is structurally sound, you can thank engineers for that. And frankly, if you're eating food right now, there's probably engineers involved all the way along that process.
So what, you know, you even said that you liked Interstellar more than I did. You liked Gravity more than I did. Why?
Well, I mean, like I said, Gravity, I think, works well as a disaster movie, where the movie starts to lose me and starts to bore me.
So if I think Gravity is Twister and there's cows floating in space, I'll be a lot happier.
Yes, exactly. You know,
I would be a hell of a lot happier if a cow floating.
And I would say, I have enjoyed the movie Twister. I don't think it's a masterpiece.
Oh, no, you know, Twister's a good movie.
I don't think it's Citizen Kane.
No.
But I'm entertained.
I would watch Twister before I'd watch Citizen Kane right now. I'm going to be honest about
but
that.
But my point is I'm entertained by it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Sandra Bullock flying around the space station and propelling herself with the fire extinguisher and things like that was sort of entertaining to me. The parts that I found silly for a quote-unquote realistic movie is that they have limited oxygen and Clooney's just yammering away.
Yeah.
Right? You have limited oxygen. You should probably not talk. I mean, if you want to talk about realistic, remember Apollo 13?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't talk because they didn't have any oxygen. So you don't waste your breath yammering away about whatever it is that he's yammering about. And then the other thing about, you know, that the Sandy Bullock's character having, you know, a daughter that passed away, and, you know, I don't need this kind of personal tragedy in my disaster movies. You know, I believe that the human will to survive is strong, but I also could have bought that after all of this oxygen deprivation and having been through what she'd been through at 17,000 miles an hour, that you might just give up because it's too hard. I would have bought that entire thing without the dead child backstory.
And yeah, so you're saying if someone like me, a political scientist, was on my moonwalk, but I didn't have a dead kid, I'd just go floating off in space and I'd be gone forever.
Sure. Well, that's what Clooney did. Clooney must not have had any kids.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Right.
Okay. No, but, I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is there an entertainment aspect in these movies that you, as somebody who has a little bit of knowledge into how some of this stuff might work or has more knowledge than the layperson, that you're like, you know what, I'll let it go?
Yes. I think to some extent I do appreciate that, quote unquote, that attempt. I think I appreciate that attempt at realism more than you do.
No.
Because it's so infrequent.
Yeah, but I want to go back for a minute. You brought up Apollo 13.
Yeah.
And Apollo 13, I enjoyed that movie.
That's a great movie.
I mean, and they do these things, and they talk a lot about crap I don't know anything about.
Sure.
I still don't know about. So why can't movies like Gravity or Interstellar do the same thing for a layperson like me? Why does someone like me watch it and go like,
Well, but Apollo 13 is telling a story that actually happened. They know what happened, right? Mm-hmm. In Gravity, you're speculating about what would happen if space junk hit the space shuttle while it was in orbit and doing something, right? It's pure speculation. Now, the thing about that movie, for all the realism, I don't think that satellites and space... I don't think that the shuttle orbits in the same orbit.
Right, no. I'm actually willing to let that stuff go.
But, right, so you have to...
If I thought about that happening... It'd just scare the regular crap out of me. Like, one time you told me about some interview about some lady saying it's theoretically possible for all the oxygen molecules to move to one side of the room. So I think about that at least a few times a day now. So.
Well, right. So, you know, but as I said, in the case of Apollo 13, they know what happened, right? There is a historical narrative there that they can follow. They don't have to speculate about what might happen. Whereas in Gravity, they are speculating about what might happen, and that goes tenfold for Interstellar.
So do you respect a movie, I'll take Gravity out of this, but do you respect a movie like Interstellar that it tries to take some of the science and, you know, even though they throw stupid lines by the engineers here and there, but the science of actual interstellar travel, this theoretical science, that they actually try to respect that? Does that make you feel, okay, I'm willing to watch this movie more?
Yes.
Or someone like me, who I don't have as grand of an understanding, it's like, oh, look, those are neat kind of visual effects. I've seen that on Doctor Who. Now I need a good story.
Yeah, no, like I said, I respect the attempt at realism, you know. And here's the thing, I like Star Trek a lot, as you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I enjoy the speeding off at, you know, Warp 9 and meeting aliens with rubber masks and funny foreheads. And I dig all that, right? But Star Trek is not about space travel. Star Trek is about travel, right? It's about mm-hmm. travel and what exploration means for the
human. Like what I would see in Montana.
For the human condition. No, but think about, you know, 500 years ago when, you know, Columbus discovered America, mm-hmm. right? He met...
Good thing for all us white people.
To him, the people that he met on Hispaniola might as well have been, you know, Star Trek aliens with rubber masks, right? They were an alien culture that he didn't understand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the story that Star Trek is telling. That's not the story that... So it's not about space travel, you know? The whole concept of space travel in something like Star Trek or even Star Wars is taken as a given, right? It's not risky. Space travel in Star Trek is risky in the sense that you might run into Romulans who want to blow you up. Or you might get sucked into a weird black hole, right? It's risky in the same sense that Columbus setting off might have run into a hurricane. It's not the same kind of risk that they're talking about in Interstellar or even in Apollo 13.
Okay, there. You heard it. Scientists like smarter movies than... political scientist.
Not a scientist, I'm an engineer.
All right, engineer. See, we'll have another discussion about that sometime. So, thanks, Tina.
Thank you.
Your husband's my favorite person on the planet, so say hi to him.
I will send his regards.
Yeah. So, that's our conversation. You know, please join us via Twitter and go to seedsing.com. Let us know what you think, and we'll be back right after this.